Go for Dwara Margeshu.
Krita Kautuka Toranam.
Krita Kautuka Toranam.
Chitta Dravaja Pataka Grayer.
Chitta Dravaja Pataka Grayer.
Anta Pratiha Tatapam.
Anta Pratiha
Tatapam. And then, so we've already chanted, so if you can do the word for word, Maharaj.
Okay. Gopura.
Gopura.
The gateway of the city.
The gateway of the city.
And Dwarapura. Sorry, Dwara.
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 Door.
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 Margeshu.
Margeshu.
On different roads.
On different roads.
Krita.
Undertaken.
Kautuka.
Because of the festival.
Toranam. Decorated arch. Chitra. Painted. Dwaja. Flags. Pataka Agrai.
Pataka Agrai.
By the foremost signs. Antaha. Within. Patihata. Checked. Tapam.
Sunshine.
Mars, do you want everybody to mute at this time?
I guess so, yeah. Okay.
Just let us know if you want us to unmute. Okay, so just give me 1 second here to switch over. Please, everybody mute themselves individually.
Got it. Ukam karoti vachalam pangun langayate garim ya kripatam aham vande shri gurum ginatarinam gopura dwara marge shu krita kautuka toranam chitra dvaja pataka grayer anta pratihata tapam. The city gateway, the household doors, and festooned arches along the roads were all decorated with festive signs like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. Flags, garlands, and painted signs and slogans all combined to shade the sunshine. We mentioned we should also do the next verse today also, number 14. Samarjita Mahamarga Ratta Panaka Chatvaram Shiktam Ganda Jalair Uptam Palam Pushpakshatan Kurai. The highways, subways, lanes, markets, and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruits, flowers, and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. My goodness. It probably says in his two purports, signs of decoration in special events were also collected from the gifts of nature, such as the plantain trees, the mango trees, fruits and flowers. Mango trees, coconut palms, and plantain trees are still accepted as auspicious signs. The trees mentioned above were all painted with a picture of either Garuda or Hanuman, the two great servitors of the Lord. For devotees, such paintings and decorations are still adored, and the servitor of the Lord is paid more respects for the satisfaction of the master. Second purport, the scented waters prepared by distilling flowers like rose and kiora were requisitioned to wet the roads, streets, and lanes of Dwarkadham. To wet the roads, streets, and lanes of Dwarkadham. Such places, along with the marketplace and public meeting places, were thoroughly cleansed. From the above description, it appears that the city of Dwarkadham was considerably big, containing many highways, streets, and public meeting places with parks, gardens, and reservoirs of water. All were very nicely decorated with flowers and fruits. And to welcome the Lord, such flowers and fruits with unbroken seeds and grains were strewn over the public places. Unbroken seeds of grains or fruits in the seedling stage were considered auspicious, and they are still used by the Hindus in general on festival days. Jai. So Papa Ki Jai. So it's, I was looking at these very, very nice purports. But in some ways, kind of simple. Maybe somebody else has better more intelligent comments. But to me, I was just remembering the fact. Actually, it's the I guess it's the Light of the Bhagavat. There or somewhere. Yeah. There definitely is one verse where Prabhupada talks about it. But the exact phrase, I think it's also from there. And Prabhupada says that a pure devotee lives in this material world seeing everything as a replica of Vaikuntha, yeah, and lives quite happily and peacefully. So Boma Lila, you know, many people take advantage, of course, of Krishna's presence to become purified and advance in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna makes it possible by giving us the same paraphernalia to use here that we use in Vaikuntha, in Goloka, you know, for his satisfaction. You know? So in some ways, the Boma Lila is not inferior to the Nitya Lila, the Goloka Lila. You know? So many opportunities are here to serve Krishna. And of course, some of the pastimes that Krishna enjoys in the material world aren't available in the spiritual world. Krishna doesn't, you know, rip the guts out of Hiranyakasipu and toss them all over Vaikuntha in the spiritual world, you know. Bhakti in South Africa. Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was talking about during the Brajmana Parikrama. He came and visited us during the Parikrama. He was describing how Krishna smashes different demons like that with his club. Kamada Kamwiki. And he doesn't worship. And so when he's back in Vaikuntha, every now and again he looks at the different dried blood and remembers the pastimes and thinks how nice that was to smash that demon. The revenge consciousness. You know? So it's all possible. It doesn't say Krishna was expanding into many forms, but yeah, he does that so often. So maybe somebody is feeling unhappy because Krishna is walking down another street, not walking down my street. But why not, you know? But in any case, everybody's, well, Krishna may come this way, you know. I've heard that sometimes some of the gopis were becoming depressed, making flower garlands every day for Krishna after he went to Dwarka and he wasn't coming back. So they were saying, well, why should we make any more flower garlands, you know?
Hi, Bo. Hi, Krishna. Anybody there? Hi, Bo.
Krishna, I think we're supposed to just stay put if we get cut off, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Giannis, we're just going to sit tight, right?
Yeah.
All right, Krishna.
Yeah, that's what Ramananda told us last time around. Just hang on free conferencing. I don't think it's exactly true for those that log in the regular way through the regular Skype connection.
Is Maharaj accessible to Skype, or is he trying to pre-conferencing? Not attended.
No, I think he's on Skype.
Yeah, we'll just hang on and see what happens. You know, Skype, I went to another computer. I figure I would try to log in on another computer. And it says all of my I have quite a few contacts on Skype. It says they're all offline, which makes me think that Skype must have crashed because no one is online.
But free conference is working fine, I suppose.
Right, free conference is working, but my other computer indicates that it can't. I have a lot of contacts because I talk to a lot of my wedding couples on Skype. And
can you see Maharaj?
No one online of my contacts.
Can you see Maharaj online right now?
I'm showing that no one is online. Period. On Skype. Looking in another computer.
Hello? Are you still there?
Hare Krishna.
Hi, Bo.
Give me a second to connect up, okay? I'll be right there.
I'm going to need your help, and I want you to observe me.
In case you have to put a catheter when I'm not here. Morning.
Right not so bad, but it's heavy, you know. Because they realize that, for one thing, the education we're getting doesn't work. You know, the civilization is producing, you know, 1,745 new microbiologists every year. And so, yeah, who can occupy them? You know, another 14,000 lawyers every year. All they can do is sue each other. You know, so because we become separated from nature, and then we become greedy, you know, nothing satisfies us. We become so hard, we can't appreciate these nice things like that. When we go to Manipur or places like that, I mean, this is Valparaiso, because it's a very beautiful place. The ocean here is just unbelievable. The water is so clear, its colors like that, and the seacoast. And of course, everybody wants to live here. They want to associate with Krishna. So they're building all these high-rise apartment buildings. And it's like being like a cockroach or an ant. A particular little compartment, you can't make a lot of noise because, you know, the neighbors, you know, will hear through the walls, and there's plumbing and pipes passing above your head with everybody's stool and urine flowing over your head. Yeah. And it's a very, it just destroys it. But even Santiago is worse, you know. Yeah. These natural gifts are so important. In Manipur, the same thing. It's always asking you. It's a poor country. In the northeast, Sudamadamar is just from there, so you're able to go to there. It's still very simple, you know. But somebody was asking me, it's a poor country. And I was trying to grasp my consciousness. And finally, I realized the situation is that there's not much money there because nobody needs money. Yeah, almost everybody has, you know, some kind of land, and they have like 140 different kinds of vegetables. Everybody lives for the most part on about five different kinds of rice. They have one rice for the winter that has a lot of starch and it produces heat. And then in every house they have a big loom, like maybe like 2 meters across, and they make all the girls know how to combine different patterns. So the house will take up one side of the courtyard. On the opposite side, there'll be a little raised platform with a roof over it, other side of the patio. And that's where they sit to watch the kirtan performances. Because every house has at least 12 to 13 kirtan performances every year within the house. You know? And they said there'll be a place for Tulsi. So during the other part of the time when there's no kirtan festivals going on, then they'll have, ladies will be working the loom. And the children could run around the courtyard without much danger. And so everybody's wearing clothing which was made by your sister, your daughter, your aunt, eating fresh vegetables, so much variety. The drums they have are called pong. It's like a mridanga, but it's called pong. And it's made from a hardwood. It's called wang. It grows locally in the Himalayas there. It's in the foothills of the Himalayas. And so Maharaj, we organized a program in San Francisco at the Academy of Sciences there. And they had us do some shows during the day at the museum. It's one of the best museums in America. Very nice. And also he brought one person who makes the drums. So we were sitting there in a little raised up area like that with a display of things, making this drum over about, I think it took about 3 weeks, yeah. He brought a big piece of this wang wood, like the size of a mridanga, but solid, you know, heavy, you know, hardwood. And then he had like a hand lathe, you know, it rotates it. And so I had to sit there and turn the lathe like crank it around. And he had a sharp chisel, he had been grinding it out like that. So eventually he made this very nice hollow shell. And as he was turning it, he would like tap on the side every now and again to see the sound it was producing, you know. So it's a very personal thing. It didn't matter exactly the size, because it had to be the right size to produce the right sound, which would vary. So he made the shell, and then he had cut these round rings out of wood, top and the bottom to fit. And within those were these metal rings, and I think it was about Then there was a on top of then you had the, on top of that there was a letter like the place you kind of strike in the flat part of letter for both ends, and there was one of those which fit between the metal ring and the wooden ring like that tied in there, and then there was another one which fit over that, and then got cut out in the middle to expose the other one. And then all those, of course, had holes where the straps that would go back and forth across the body of the gun to fit to pull them tight like that. And then finally he ground up some low-class iron on a piece of metal with some rice, soaked rice, and then this kind of paste that he put right in the middle of the part of the gun to strike that made a silly gelatinous membrane, a little carbon there too, some carbon, yeah, metal and carbon and rice flour. It was kind of elastic, but of course it was kind of tanging the sound to it, you know? And when he was cutting the leather, he had a big piece of leather, maybe like about 3 feet across, and one little piece of wood. How'd it go again? One piece of wood, that long piece of bamboo, kind of narrow, that he sat on one side of his knee with a little stick under it, so it was raised up a little bit above the leather, but it extended right into the center. Then he cut up a little tip with a chisel, maybe like an inch or two, an inch, and stuck up. There was a groove in the long bamboo rod sticking over there. Then he pushed the chisel against it and started pulling. And of course, it started to cut off the thin strip, and he was like adjusting the width like that. So that was going to be the strap material. But as he was pulling, and of course, the whole thing was turning in a circle. And it's just the most bizarre thing, because it was just like this big, long strip of leather was just sliding out of this piece of leather like that, you know. And people were stopping and looking at him with amazement. And he was kind of looking at them, well, what's so strange? What are you looking at? Yeah. You know? And during this whole thing, while he was making this drum, there was an exhibition next to us. Because we were part of this thing called Death, The Trip of a Lifetime. It was published by the Time magazine. Maybe you even saw it. And it was a look at death in different cultures. And it actually was the whole life finishing off like that. And it was actually very good. It was interesting, different cultures, how they view death and living and stuff. But part of the exhibition was right next to us. And it was a little tent open on four sides. You walk inside, like about, maybe like 12 feet square. And so on all four sides, it had projection areas. Maybe it had six different, I don't know, 18 or something, 18 different slide projectors. And they all were playing, you know, different slides in turn according to some computer preset thing in the audio. So it showed these different slides of music playing, fading in and out, of all the different things happening. And it would break down at least once a day, maybe like two or three times a day. And so there was a technician on call, and he would show up pretty quick. So we never out of service really for more than like about 15 minutes, you know. But he saw us making the drum, you know. And so when the whole thing was finished, he stopped and came over to me and he said, "I've been watching this, you know." And he said, "Everything he did is simple, you know. It requires like a lot of talent to do it, but it's simple." You know? And he said, "You never would figure this out." You know, he said, "And actually, what he's doing is just as high tech as what I do to keep these things working." You know? But
I have their numbers.
It's very simple like that. You know? So that's kind of like the whole technology is accepting that God has given us everything we need. Om Purnama Adaha Purnamidam. And then starting to use it like that. And rather than trying to artificially create things to satisfy unnatural desires. You know? So, of course, that's the material world. We're here for that purpose, and the competition is there. So sometimes it's quite natural. That's part of the Purnim. Is everybody's fighting with everybody else, and in the extreme moments, people start eating each other. Yeah. So from that point of perspective, there's nothing to be lamented about Kali Yuga. People are just experiencing what they want to experience, and of course we do it too. You know, at least I do. But the other side is that when we cultivate the human spirit by getting up early, even here, we're in this little apartment when the devotee evacuated us, in the apartment for us to use while we're here. And we do nice programs with the universities, very nice, Light of the Bhagavad, cultivation of the human spirit. But we still have got up early, chanted some rounds, and then had a little mangalarti, the three of us, a little bit softly, but oh, it's so satisfying. I know every time you chant nicely, try and hear the words, try and understand the meaning, the kirtan, it works, you know. You feel satisfaction, you know. You see these different flowers. The best flower arrangements I know are in Mexico, better than Calcutta. I mean, when the curtains open for Radha, Madan, Gopal, and these fruits are everywhere and flowers, you just, your whole body is like, it feels happy, you know. It's impossible not to smile. You know? And then you think, oh, they're all for Madan, Gopal, and Radharani. And they reciprocate. If they didn't reciprocate, forget it. There'd be no process, you know. But they look happy. They're happy. And so, very simple place, like Manipur, not much money, but they have real wealth like that. One Spanish poet, I was reading one of his PowerPoint shows, somebody sent me really nice things on pantheism, a little bit about the super soul. But he's saying we've developed so many things, you know, but what has it got us, you know? He said, we can put a man on the moon, but we can't walk across the street to say hello to our neighbor. So, that's my reflections, you know. It's interesting, too, the word Hindu. He actually accepts the word as being like having some kind of reality in terms of social and cultural context. And being, I guess, you know, connected to the whole greater culture has good value, you know. So it's kind of like my comprehension here, that's a wonderful scene, so cheerful, and everybody's appreciating Krishna's presence in different ways like that. And Krishna, of course, is appreciating the scene like that, and every time it's different. You know? And we were in the Radha Govinda temple in Vrindavan, maybe a lot of devotees have been there. And sitting there, you sit there, just play my flute for a little bit on one side and chanting. And of course, Krishna, you chant the prayers and you glorify the buildings, and then Krishna reveals himself, you know. So I started to have these thoughts about, wow, what was this like during Janmashtami when Rupa Goswami was there, you know, the Goswamis. You know, it was by the Jamuna. So many barges were actually tying up there on their way from Agra to Delhi and places at lunchtime, because there was an arrangement to cook something like, I don't know, like 800 kilos of rice every day or something, some quantity, the king was supplying it. So every day they were cooking and there was lunch for everybody. And Radha Govinda in the temple was probably fresh, all the stones. And so all the architraves and during the festivals were full of lamps. And probably different groups were like competing to get time to sing to the deities, and festoons hanging everywhere, you know. And so even in England, what's his name? Can't his name now. He's in charge of the Hindu center, Shunakarishi, in Oxford. He was taking us to see some of the churches there, and he showed us you can still see where the colors were. And he said we had this impression that it was all gray and stone, but he said no, everything was painted in bright colors, in blaze of color everywhere, and you can still see some of the remnants like that. So we're really being soundly cheated, thinking we're getting all these benefits. We get some toys, communication toys, but in the end, they actually diminish our ability to be human and communicate with each other. You know, we can have a Skype class around the world, but we can't talk to the guy on the other side of the wall here, two feet away from us. Yeah. And of course, then you develop subtle mental abilities. Prabhupada says, television, all right. He said, make two dozen of them and use them for an important purpose. So that's Prabhupada's estimation of the value of television. Is, you know, two dozen of them would do the job, you know. And beyond that, it's a joke. Yeah? So let me look at the purport here. Anything else? So many thoughts were coming. I know when you experience cultures like this, you just see it. It just makes your whole body awake, and then it's very easy to do. Like the last verse says, when these finer tissues are stimulated, you can appreciate Krishna. His body can appreciate Krishna. It says the water was sprinkled everywhere. Of course, you know, probably it says the elephants did that. I guess they had the ox carts full of scented water, and the elephants were blasting it everywhere. Knowing elephants, they probably were blasting the people half the time, too, out of fun like that. It probably says that whenever they're called into work like this, they're given a few kilos of beer to drink, because the sun kind of gets their head sometimes, and they go crazy. So to keep them cool headed, they get a little bit of beer to drink. To drink like that. There's a whole intoxicating scene. And it probably says in these hot cities it has to be done a couple times during the day like that. Yeah? Yeah. And meeting places, public places, decorated, unbroken seeds and grains. Yeah. And certain trees again are auspicious like that. As far as I understand, the idea is that human beings live where coconuts and bananas grow. It's a place like Chile, it's too far south. And so it's cold here. And you see, the people are efficient here. And the reason seems to be because if you're not efficient, you're going to die, you know. Efficient in terms of industrialization. They have modern vehicles and stuff like that. They're trying to struggle with the industrial society for their economy. But in Peru, where we're coming from, you go a little more north, and they have like bananas, coconuts in the market. The markets are incredible. These big bags of fresh spices and all this stuff. They're unbelievable. You know? Again, it's intoxicating one who's in the market, you know? And not that expensive. You know? People live in the small towns still, and everybody just comes and brings their stuff in from the fields and sells it and trades it. You know? So, and they even made investigations. One French group made an investigation of one peninsula in Ecuador. They said there was the thing could produce enough food to feed all of Europe if people just wanted a simple diet like that. You know? So practically speaking, of course, probably won't happen because people don't want it. But for those devotees who do want it, we can arrange a very nice, simple process and try more and more to be happy with our neighbors. Developing rural communities. To me, that's a super big challenge in ISKCON we have to get to. And so my focus is trying to work on this educational development, higher education. We had one teleconference this morning already with devotees on the Bhakti Bhai Baba program. And it's just so even difficult, but so enlivening, you know. And then I can see it changes you so much every day hearing like this, talking about published books. And the second thing we're working on is Radha-Madan Bihari in Peru. Seeing that they're comfortable and kind of glorify their temple and everything else. We're making a movie right now with one nice Peruvian director, his perspective on the deity worship and the deities and these things. And the third thing is rural development. So in Peru, it's a desert, you know, on the western side. But if you go a little north, you start getting groundwater and seasonal rain like in California. It rains once a year, enough. And then the groundwater is just like 6 feet below the surface. And then there are canals. So it's manageable. And I was thinking, what would I do there? Because I'm going to try and move there. Well, okay. I was going to build a three-story tower. Hari Lila is an architect. He can design a three-story tower for me. Three paces by three paces. And I can be a wizard up on the top of my tower there. And then we can get a 100-watt radio station. And that reach about like two mile radius. Okay, then everybody else can buy their houses or whatever else, and you haven't got to be on the same property and have a whole little radio station going, you know. So like that, everybody has their gifts, abilities. They learn all these village crafts, temporarily get a radio station, a studio, record radio shows, and then market them. So once you get in the country, you begin to discover over one or two generations that nature has given us so many things for entertainment, you know, for maintaining our bodies properly. And the main thing is when we cultivate this morning program, hearing and chanting, then we don't become greedy, we don't become afraid. And we go on then with this, you know, in harmony with what Krishna's providing. You know? That's my understanding. Any comments, questions, complaints?
Okay, Prabhu, let me just switch over here. Unmuted. Okay, now we're unmuted. So any questions or comments from Maharaj?
Yes. Yes.
Go ahead, Mother Gandhari.
Thank you so much, Maharaj. It's very enlightening to see what is happening in different parts of the world. And, it's very nice. And you were mentioning something about developing subtle mental abilities. Is it a natural phenomena and that happens, or is it necessary, or is it just one of the side effects of Krishna consciousness?
No, of course it mentions that a devotee, as he advances, all the eight mystic powers, you know, become accessible to him, and he uses them as necessary. So, of course, one of our biggest endeavors is sankirtan, you know, book distribution, that kind of thing. And so you go out, you start seeing, you can understand what people are thinking, their mentality, develop so many things that appear like a mystery. It's a common person, but you know, it's a technique. I mean, the mystical powers are all pretty much explainable if you know what you're doing. So like that, we develop them, or else somebody cooking. You know, if somebody, for example, Oscar, he's making these movies, and you can see it took more than one lifetime to develop his abilities. He just goes into film archives, he puts stuff together, music, and within a short time, he has something which is just entertaining, it's profound. We had to do a thing on poetry here. So I looked up in the Encyclopedia Britannica. I pay $40 a year to use that. And the article on poetry is quite nice. It's by the U.S. Poet Laureate, Howard, something like that. And you can see the guy basically a yogi type person. He's beyond at the level of introspection, intuition. And he's explaining that poetry has to have certain techniques of rhythm and things like that, which are all appear quite mysterious. Music, rhythm. And then it's supposed to, Maya Angelou, she said poetry is supposed to go through the mind, get the mind attracted, you know, get through it and slide past the mind and touch the heart. So that's the greatest mystical power, you know. So the devotees, they have all these accessible like that, and they manifest them in different ways in terms of their particular service, so sankirtan, cooking. I mean, it's a mystical power to be able to control small children. And I've seen this. And I've seen Abhimanyu, one Gurukul teacher, the lobby in the temple in Brooklyn is about, you know, 40 feet long and 20 feet wide or something. And after Sunday feast, all these kids were just cutting up like little six-year-old kids, and the mothers could not control the parents. So he walked through, he's a little big. He looked at him, he just grabbed one little kid and picked him up. The kid was, you know, howling and carrying on with his friends. He just grabbed him in the back of the shirt and picked him up and was holding him in front of him and said in this very ferocious voice, "Stop this! Stop this!" And the kid was in shock. And he put him down, he ran to his mother. And Abhimanyu looked at all the rest of the kids, they all ran to their mothers. And the whole thing was under control. So just amazing like this. So that's a mystical power, you know. Okay, you can walk on water, all that kind of stuff, but how much do you need to do that? I don't know. Madan Mohan, if he's here today, he'll tell you about one time his cat walked on water. He had a hot tub in the backyard. The cat walked on water one time. So yeah, they're all possible in varying degrees, different situations, but a devotee just adjusts them in terms of his or her service.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your mystical powers. Maybe you heard this story. Maybe Dai told me. One man was walking the beach in Los Angeles, and he kicked this thing, and it was a brass pot. You know, so he pulled it out and sort of rubbing on it to polish it, and out came a genie. And the genie kind of shook his head, got oriented, and he said, "Oh, okay, yeah, Kali Yuga. But all right, you get one wish and you can't wish for more wishes." So the guy said, "Oh, really? Anything?" And then he said, "Yeah, yeah." You know, so he was thinking, and he said, "You know, I hate traveling on the water. I get seasick and air sick, but I've always wanted to go to Hawaii, you know. So do you think maybe you can make like a causeway, you know, where I can drive to Hawaii?" And the genie's thinking, and he says, "My goodness, so much cement, so many pylons, everything else." He said, "Think of something else, you know." the guy's thinking for a while and thinking, he says, well, you know, I've been married for 7 years, you know, and I've never been able to satisfy my wife. Do you think you could adjust things so my wife would be satisfied with me? And Jimmy thinks about it and he says, now, how many lanes did you want for that highway?
I heard that one.
Yeah. You can also change my husband's not satisfied with me, you know. But no, it's just Draupadi. What is it? We're just reading right now that Draupadi. No, Satyabhama. Satyabhama wanted to learn from Draupadi how she was able to keep five husbands happy, like that. But it's a whole art, you know. Maybe make her husbands feel happy and happy, having healthy. You know, so these are also mystical powers, you know. But these are real ones that really are natural, you know, like that. It's not a,
I'll make a comment on the first verse that we did the translation. Prabhupada's describing, actually the translation's describing, that the flags, festoons, a painted sign, speaking about all the auspicious trees and plants, how they combine to shade the sunshine. I was listening to the news last night, noting that all over the country they're breaking so many records right now, that the sun has become so strong, you know, for whatever reason, whether it's the greenhouse effect or, you know, who knows, just simply the age of Kali. But even in Canada, the sun has become so strong, they're having terrible heat waves, and people are dying left and right. But then I was thinking that, so it's describing here in the spiritual world, in Dwarka, that the sun is being shaded, but it's nothing like here. In fact, you don't even need the sun in the spiritual world. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, "Natad Vasyate Soyo Nashashanka Napavaka," that in the spiritual world there's no need for the sun or the moon or fire for illumination, because everything there is self-illuminated. But the sunshine in the spiritual world, though one may want shade from it, there's nothing negative. It's all pleasure. It's all somehow Krishna's arrangement to create variety and different moods and flavors within the spiritual world. So even though it's mentioning that it's soothing to be protected from the sunshine, it's nothing like in the material world. This material world is Kunta, and the spiritual world is Vaikunta. So it's not. It's not a negative. Everything is a positive. So that was just one thought I had while reading that.
Here in the south is setting records for cold weather.
Mm.
And it's going to get worse unless people, you know, give up these simple activities. Unless we give them up. You know.
And some of these plants that are mentioned as auspicious, like mango, one of my office managers the other day was picking mangoes, and because it's now Kali Yuga, the sap from the mango tree got on her, and she got terrible, terrible rashes from it, which is very, very common. And she had to go to the doctor and get treatments for it, and it took a really long time to finally clear up. So even the auspicious trees, the toxin of mango is very similar to poison ivy. So anyway, becoming less auspicious in the age of Kali.
Actually, I may give a comment on that if you don't mind. What about the body being so toxic that the body is reacting, because right now we're putting so much stuff in the body, not to do something with the plant, or maybe it's the fertilizer. I mean, not with the body that's reacting somehow or other.
I was thinking the same thing, that not that the plants are coming auspicious, but our reaction to auspicious thing is we get sick.
That could be true.
Also make another comment regarding the festoons, the plants, the decorations. It's actually very simple for devotees to go out preaching, and now we go, I'm taking Rath Yatra Prashadam to make connection with devotees, and we go to some streets and we see there's mango leaves hanging on the doorstep, so we know this is a Gujarati's house. Anywhere in the world, you see a Gujarati, you'll see mango leaves festoon hanging on the doorstep, right? And also sometimes swastika and other nice signs. They're still around anywhere in the world. When you see Gujaratis, you see those things happening. So,
No, when in Mexico, they hang chilies. I'm sorry for my suspiciousness. I guess it's all.
So the point is, because this section is very dear to me in the sense that it also, there's a couple other sections where it's Prithu Maharaj entering the city, Lord Ramchandra entering Ayodhya. So this is described the same way of the decorations in the city as well as the houses and all that, how they're decorated. And it's very, very similar details. And this is very important for us. The reason is because this is very scientific, and I'm doing some research on that, like sacred geometry, which is called Rangoli, scented water. So all these things are very peaceful for mind and spiritual upliftment. And you see the water pots. The water pots are outside, left outside the door. That means it brings in fortune. You have coconut and then unbroken. You see the grains that you use, make rangoli with. Rangoli is the sacred geometry. It's made with grains. And the scientific reason, behind it is that every household is supposed to feed every living entity by law. So 5 o'clock early in the morning, the women in South India still do it. Actually, it's called kolam. So they have flowers made from different grains, and it gives different color, like the green from the green mung, rice flour, all that. And what happens is there are certain insects or bugs, they only come out during the dark hours, and as soon as the sun comes out, they go back again. So by them doing it before 5 in the morning, they're actually feeding those living entities, and they get so much more blessings from them. And also the sacred geometry, because it's done in such a way that it actually prevents Alzheimer's in the old age.
My goodness.
Yeah. Wow. So all the scientific reasons for everything that's mentioned in this verse, actually, and the water pots, the shape of the kalash, TM people have done the scientific study on that, on the different shapes and how they actually balance our organs in the body when we look at a rangoli. This is a very, very scientific, important aspect. It actually, because see, our eyes are always looking for something beautiful, and when you see rangoli and your mind is stuck, the eyes are stuck, and it actually balances different organs in the body. So
there's a nice book, actually it's a nasty book, but it's a nice book called From Bauhaus, B-A-U-H-A-U-S, to Our House by Tom Wolfe. And Bauhaus is one of the most horrible architectural movements in the history of the world. And he goes through and shows, you know, how it has destroyed the human spirit on modern time. It's very easy reading. He's a good writer, of course, like that. But it's very nice in terms of seeing what you're talking about, how these forms and stuff are vastu and architecture. Are so essential to have a human body.
Yes, and that's why, personally, I think it's only the devotees are the ones who are going to start implementing that. So the sooner we hear about this thing and start doing it, you know, the better it is, because we have to bring in the Vedic culture on Lord Chaitanya's instructions. And I just want to share this one little example. At Rath Yatra, we have some devotees doing henna and painting. So I inspired her by saying that, why don't you do tilak? And she said, She said, it is us who are going to teach them. Why didn't I think about that? I said, look, we have 12 tilak marks, and those have scientific reason, as mentioned in sixth canto, and they have some very good, important reason. They are like, Prabhu coming here from Baroda. He's here. Hare Krishna. So Vasu Goswami Prabhu is visiting right now. sorry, that was the noise. So anyway, so she realized that, and she said, yes, we should do this. Devotees are the ones who are going to implement this. So she said, yes, now I'll start doing tilak and explain the importance of tilaks. What is it called? Those, in the sixth canto? Shield. Narayan Kavach. Right? So we have this Narayan Kavach. So we have
spiritual arm.
Names of Vishnu body.
Yeah. And neck beads and neck beads and tilak, you know, I've heard are sufficient curvature in the Kali Yuga. You wear your kantimala and you put tilak on and you're shielded from the evil eye.
Right. So this is the point. So Hare Krishna,
okay, I have one thing to add to this.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
There's a red Hanuman flag available online at thepujashop.com. Actually, Hanuman's so popular in India, and you do see Hanuman flags here and there. But what struck me on the way back from India this last trip was how all-pervasive this form of Garuda is in the Indonesia, you know, Garuda Airlines, but also in Bangkok, on all the prominent buildings, on the facings of the buildings, they have these huge sculptures in gold of Garuda. It's this, their national symbol is Garuda. So the Brahmins that came from India, you know, they must have impressed the populations in Southeast Asia about, you know, the auspiciousness of having Garuda displayed in the city.
There was one empire, what's the name, Vishayan? Vishayan Empire, I understand, that expanded out of India and went all the way to Malaysia and the Philippines. We reached all the way to the Philippines, the whole empire. They were the ones who built Angkor Wat like that. Yeah. Okay, I guess we should get going here now. We have another program at 3 o'clock. But for me, it's always so nice. I wanted to log on yesterday, but yesterday we were driving, so I couldn't get in touch here. But for me, this program is so nice. I mean, thank you very much for the opportunity to participate. And I keep trying to log on more during this time. It's nice for me, you know. And of course, with this whole first canto is the preface to the instructions of Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, the questions. So it's amazing that if this is just a preface, my goodness, you know, after that the book's going to be so incredible. And if we can make it all the way to the 10th canto in one lifetime, we're doing good. So more likely maybe we'll take birth again in ISKCON, some other universe, and meet again.
Hanuman Prasek Maharaj ki jai.
Jai.
Okay, yeah. Your salary is doubled.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Thank you.
Thanks for sticking in there with us for all the
okay. And even though we had to reboot.
Yes.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Hare
Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Is the judge still on there?